Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The rain is stopping and Irish Fest opens this afternoon. It's a good day in the city. It runs through Sunday on the lakefront here in the city of Milwaukee. And this year, the festival is paying tribute to Ireland's influence on bluegrass music, in addition to lots of bluegrass and other music, with 16 stages of Irish music that's live. There's an international bluegrass museum, Celtic Canines, which is, I have to admit, it's always the place I go first. I have to go see the little dogs. Irish dance performances, shopping, sporting events, children's areas, and a chance for you to learn about those who came before, those of us who are alive now. We have a great hour for us. We're going to be speaking with a founding member of the Clare Oral History and Folklore Group in just a moment, and then we'll be hearing some bluegrass music from a group of young musicians from Galway, Ireland, We Banjo 3, and they'll be doing live music for us. I do want to tell you, this is a really great hour. We're giving away three sets of tickets to Irish Fest, and it has to happen before 11 o'clock this morning. So we ask that you do one of two things: post to our Facebook page, say whatever you want to say, I really want to go, and we'll randomly select the winners. Or if you don't have Facebook, go to our email, talk@wpr.org. So again, it's the Facebook page, the Kathleen Dunn Show, or WPR talk@wpr.org before 11 o'clock for your chance to be very lucky today and win some tickets. This first part of our program, Thomas McConmara is joining us. He's a founding member of the Clare Oral History and Folklore Group. They're doing remarkable work in getting oral histories of people who live in that county. And I would imagine that there's a lot of interest all over Ireland. It will go beyond Clare and become a countrywide project at some point. It's a voluntary group of people in the west of Ireland who have been digitally recording the memories of their country's oldest citizens, as old if you can believe it, as 106 years old. And one of its founding members is with us. The public will get a chance to hear audio samples from some of County Clare's oldest citizens at Irish Fest this year. Thomas is also a PhD candidate, is studying the War of Independence, and we thank you so much, Thomas. Welcome to Milwaukee, and welcome to Irish Fest.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
So tell me about how the project started, when you got the idea to do all these oral histories.
Well, I suppose it was something that was years in the making, Kathleen, really, but, you know, in County Clare and across Ireland, you know, so much has changed over the last 15 to 20 years, and, you know, a lot of people are conscious of that, and a lot of people are conscious of the loss that is represented by all of that change. So I suppose a number of us for a lot of years were, I suppose, aware of the fact that our oldest generation in our county, in County Clare, represented that final connection to an older way of life. You know, Ireland was traditional up until the 1960s, 1970s, and of course the world started to change, which was only natural. But as I say, when that generation of people pass away, we feel that that is the final connection to an older way of life. And we felt, as a group of young people predominantly in our county, that we shouldn't allow that to happen without documenting the memories of that generation and making them available to current and future generations. So to try and maybe reconnect a lot of people who maybe in some ways have lost a little connection to their identity. So I suppose there's an awful lot of facets to it, a lot of motivations, but principally the urgency to establish our group came from the realization that we have maybe 5-10 years until that older way of life is lost, and it's lost forever. And we use a proverb which I think powerfully conveys that reality. It's a Senegalese proverb which states, "When an old man dies, a library burns." Mm. And, you know, that has kind of underpinned the entire philosophy of Cuíomhna an Clár, or Clare Memories, the group which I represent.
And as many of us are remembering World War II people and honoring them because they're dying in huge numbers, you have people who were in the War of Independence in the early part of the last century, and those people, I'm sure, are dying in large numbers too, and their stories are really worth capturing and preserving forever.
It's absolutely vital to document them. I mean, obviously people who lived through the Irish War of Independence, which ran from roughly 1919 to 1923, there are very few people who are left, and the people who are left were young children at the time, but it's still vital to document the memories of those people. And we've one very strong example which I will refer to at the lectures at the Hedge School, is a man called Paddy Gleeson, who was 106 years of age when he passed away in 2010. And Paddy was a person that I interviewed on a number of occasions, but almost every time I'd interview him, he would gravitate to one particular recollection of his. And that was during the War of Independence, when Paddy was about 12 or 13 years of age, seeing the Black and Tans, who were a part of the British forces that were occupying the country at the time, seeing them coming into his local village, knowing he was in danger, and trying to think what he would do, and climbing up a tree to escape from the Black and Tans, where he sat on top of the tree looking down at them, raiding houses looking for Irish volunteer members. So, I mean, that's such a powerful, tangible connection to that period. And if that was lost, it would be, criminal, and to my mind. And I suppose we keep, emphasising that it's never been easier, given the digital age we live in, to document these memories. And it's also never been more urgent, given the fact that these people will be gone. So we have documented a considerable amount of people who have childhood memories from that period, but they're almost gone. And as you say, even 20 years later in World War II, and a number of Irishmen would have fought in World War II, that generation is almost gone. So all of those experiences and insights are almost lost. And importantly, those people who have lived the so-called ordinary lives are people who can give you an insight that, history or historical discourse doesn't usually give you, because history has been written from the top down. And I'm sure it's the same in America in many cases. There's a hierarchical version of history. So the voices of the ordinary people are not often included. And by gathering this, we can include their voice in the narrative and make it a much more richer narrative, be it on World War One, Two, or the War of Independence, or any aspect of social history.
And isn't it true, I found this true with children, that if you learn your family's history, if you know about participation in a war or climbing up a tree when the Black and Tans were coming, or whatever the situation is, you really put history in a different context, don't you? And you become, I think, engaged in a broader history beyond your family.
You're completely right. If you consider the way in which we try and engage young people in history, I think abstract notions or faraway realities often don't work. But if you humanise it and you localise it, and you localise it to the level of the family, and you talk about somebody's grandfather or grandmother or, aunt or whoever it might be who was involved in a particular, scenario, or who lived through a particular time and could give that insight, it's a much more powerful connection for young people. And I think it can stimulate interest far greater than if in an Irish context you're talking about the French Revolution, or in an American context you're talking about something that happened in Spain. You start at a local level, you engage someone in an interest in their own history, and you can develop the broader ideas from that.
And tell me about the oral history tradition in Ireland. It's quite strong, isn't it?
It's hugely strong, Kathleen. I mean, it's one of our defining characteristics in terms of Irish identity, and it's as strong and as it's important as our traditional Irish music. And I suppose for many generations it has survived on the basis of that vibrancy and that natural tradition had carried on. But it has been largely interrupted in the last 20 to 25 or 30 years. And I suppose we've lost a lot from our oral tradition and from our folklore. And I suppose we're trying to kind of bridge that gap and help oral tradition and folklore on its way in our own way. And, I suppose there's a point to be made, which is important, is that despite the fact that oral tradition and folklore are such a defining characteristic of Irish identity, it is not recognised in the official Irish Heritage Act as part of our heritage. So as a group like ourselves, Clare Memories, we struggle, because we're a voluntary group, we struggle to get support because it's not a legislative policy. And of course, bureaucrats love legislation and policy. So we're not waiting for that to change. We're continuing to do the work, and we've interviewed over 350 people. But I would always take the opportunity to make that call that, much more support should be given to the preservation of our oral tradition.
How many people do you want to interview?
Well, we'll continue to interview people. As I say, we've interviewed from the ages of 62 to 106, and we will continue to do that. And I suppose we'll develop the three pillars of our organisation. One would be collection, and I think that will be primary for a long time to document. The second is the archival and the processing of the information, and finally then the outreach and education, and that will continue forever. I mean, it's how long will traditional music survive? How long will our oral tradition survive? We'll be there as long as we can to keep it alive.
You're doing this all on your own? With your volunteers?
Yeah, we have a lot of volunteers in our county. We have up to 50 volunteers, and 30 of those are collectors. And what we actually, a word to introduce to your listeners, we use the term curtor for our collectors. It's an old Irish word, cured, which means visit. And in County Clare, a lot of our older people, would that word will resonate with them, because in a time before television or internet or radio, they went on coured or on visit to their neighbour. And that is how our tradition survived throughout the generations. So all of our volunteers are curatori. We work voluntarily. We get some support from a grant agency in County Clare, but that's not going to survive past this year. So it's built on a voluntary effort. And we're happy to continue to do that, but obviously the capacity of the organisation is dependent on what support we get.
You need a grant of some kind to be able to really do this on a large scale, don't you?
We do, and we need, I suppose, support from the government. Ultimately, would bear responsibility for this. But I think sometimes, you know, if something isn't seen to be immediately economically productive, mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to register. But we would argue that, you know, in the context of the preservation of our, you know, our identity, is something that is massively important. And also in the context of tourism, I know the people at the Irish Fest are fully engaged in this type of tradition,
and they
want to experience that. So we can help tourism in that sense, because people will want to come and experience and to listen to these memories and to know more about the social history and cultural identity of Clare and of different parts of the country.
Now, are these interviews on the internet somehow right now, Thomas?
We have a website, clarememories.ie, that anybody can access, and what we have on that website are snippets of interviews to give a sample of the work that we've been doing, and it's our intention to upload more and more of those to again give access to the information. But our ultimate goal in County Clare on a physical level is the development of a fully accessible research facility for, you know, for academics or for local people or for tourists or for anyone who wants to engage with that. We want to be a group that collects the information but makes it available. So, you know, instead of being a group where collection becomes the end, for us, we want collection to be the beginning. So we document information and then it really comes to life through the provision of access to the voice. And an important point to be made, and it'll be illustrated at the lectures at the Hedge School, is that we want to focus on the voice, because I suppose we're so influenced now, even to the level where we speak in ways that are influenced by television or whatever it might be. But our older people have a way of speaking and a way of conveying emotion, you know, that's indigenous to them. And we'll focus on the voice, as opposed to offering transcripts or, you know, that you can read the information. We'll keep the focus on the voice of our older people. And that's ultimately, I suppose, the message is to listen to our elders, because for centuries, you know, society survived by listening to their elders. And somehow in the last 20 or 30 years, certainly in Ireland, we developed a kind of an arrogance that, you know, we didn't need to listen to these people, and that they were somehow became marginalised. And we want to return to that sense of tradition.
Because if we're lucky, we'll all be there at some point.
Well, this is it.
We'll be elders ourselves.
Absolutely, yeah. And you want a society that places its older people at the very centre of society, and that it says something about, you know, your society, that these people are important and they're valuable. And just because they're not economically productive doesn't mean they should be marginalised.
Right.
You know, they can play a massively valuable role in all communities across the world. In fact, this isn't just an Irish context, but certainly in our county, we've been working very hard to try and get that message across, and it's been working very well. I mean, we're in terms of the people of our county and across the country, we get a lot of support. Just recently, we've been nominated for 2 national awards.
Oh, good for you!
Yeah, I mean, it's delighted. We're obviously not in it for awards, but it's great when the value of our work is acknowledged and the importance of it. And on a national level, we've become involved in a group called the Oral History Network of Ireland. So we've been trying to form a network of all oral history practitioners, be they individuals or groups. And there's a major conference in Ennis, County Clare, this September, where we have international speakers on oral history. And again, that's going to be a good weekend and a good opportunity to explore the value of our oral heritage more broadly.
I love the story of the then young man climbing the tree to escape oppression. Tell me some more stories. After you've done 350, I'm sure you have some gems, don't you?
You do, absolutely. And I mean, they can be stories, they can be a recollection, or they can be just something that illustrates the change. There's one, you know, piece that we often use of a woman who actually only passed away a month ago, Margaret Waterston. She was 93. But Margaret talked about, you know, the first time she saw an aeroplane. And you know, she conveyed it very humorously, but she conveyed the reality that, she did not know what this thing was, you know. And for people now who, like, I flew on a plane over here to America, you know, it just seems so alien. But this is a woman who, within living memory, lived through an incredible change, you know. I mean, to see an airplane and not really have any idea what it was or what was happening in her world is just powerful. But, you know, there's the life story and the memories of the individual, but there's also the tradition that was passed to them. And we always ask the older people we speak to about the older people from their childhood, and that's a great way of accessing information that can sometimes go back 150 years. And I remember one interview that's in the archive with a lady in Westclare. When that question was asked of her, she spoke about her grandfather, who was a very old man when she was a child, and that he told her about his memories of the famine. Now, we're talking about the 1840s, as a lot of Americans will know about the famine and its impact on this country. But he remembered seeing a woman in West Clare with a baby in one arm, picking up leaves and eating them.
Oh.
And that transmitted from that man's, you know, witnessing of that to his granddaughter, to me, you know, over a period of 150 years. And again, it illustrates that you can reach back into the middle of the 19th century through the memories of some of our older people. But if we don't do it now, it's going to be lost forever. But there are so many stories. I mean, there's one about a Gortnery gold collar, which is one of the most prized possessions in the National Museum of Ireland in Dublin. Yeah, when any tourist will go to Dublin to see this, this is the prized possession. And in County Clare, there's a man, Paddy Malley, from Fecal in East Clare, who is 93 now. He's living in an old folks' home in Innes, and Paddy actually was the man who found that piece of gold, that collar of gold, and he tells that story with such pride because it generated such interest in the local community. But the key aspect of that is that, as Paddy tells the story, he talks about an old woman who in his childhood used to tell him about a tradition of gold being buried in the locality. Now, Paddy found the gold in 1948. It was dated from the Bronze Age, which is over 2,000 years.
Oh, man.
So that tells you the power of oral heritage, because somewhere in the folklore, that story had survived for over 2,000 years. So we're just trying to I suppose, gradually reorientate people from, you know, the kind of humdrum of modern life to the reality and the depth of our oral tradition and heritage. And these are just some of the examples that we can use.
So you're speaking at the Hedge School over the course of the next 4 days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it now. It's starting on Friday, tomorrow evening actually, at 6 o'clock. I'll be speaking at the Hedge School. And then on Saturday again at 2 o'clock I'll be speaking. So again, as I say, people will learn more about the organisation, more but generally about Irish folklore, you know, in broader terms. But also, as you said, Kathleen, I'll be playing audio samples of the people we've recorded. And that's the key thing, because I can babble on for about an hour, but if I stop and play the clips of these people, that is much more power, will much more powerfully convey the depth and the importance of this than I'll ever do. So I really hope people come along, and, you know, I'll be delighted. I'll be there at the festival in the Cultural Pavilion, and I'll be delighted to talk to anyone who wants to talk folklore or oral tradition to me. And I just want to thank, I suppose, the Milwaukee Festival Committee and Dennis McBride and Brian Witt in particular for their support and their encouragement. And you know, it's fantastic to be here and fantastic to be involved, and thank you as well for your support.
Thank you, Thomas. It's a wonderful festival, and I'm so glad you're there. And the oral tradition, all that part, the whole cultural aspect of Irish life is featured prominently at this festival, which makes it a terrific festival. To have people like you there.
Well, I don't know about people like me, but I mean, but it's certainly the ethos of the festival is very, very strong. And I was there first in 2006, and I was really blown away by the, you know, the serious nature of it. You know, I mean, it's a real strong, serious, in-depth celebration of Irish culture and of all aspects of Irish culture. And the volunteers that you meet are so loyal to their sense of Irishness. And it's really just a fantastic event, and one it's fantastic to be involved in. And, you know, there's a huge Irish traditional music presence, which is obviously massively important internationally, but they've also catered for so many other aspects of Irish culture very, very well. So it's really great to be involved. And, you know, I know that this weekend there'll be a huge crowd there again to experience all those aspects of our culture and identity.
Yeah, well, see you there. Thank you, Thomas. And give us a website or something if people want more information or to hear some of these stories if they can't.
Sure. It's there's www.clarememories.ie.
C-L-A-R-E.
As in the county, memories.ie. And they'll get all of the information about the organisation. They can listen to some clips of the people we've recorded. And they can also make contact with us. You know, we want to try and document the memories, I should have said, of older people in the Wisconsin area or even into Chicago who are originally from County Clare. So if people out there who are listening might know people who came from County Clare and are now living in America, we want to set up a recording project to document the memories of those people as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Thomas. All the best to you. Have a wonderful run at Irish Fest. Irish Fest starting today. Thomas McConmara is founding member of the Clare Oral History and Folklore Group. You can find him at Irish Fest in the cultural area this weekend, where he will look at the schedule and you'll find out exactly when he will be there. You can hear some of his oral history, which sounds marvelous. Thank you. We're going to celebrate the Irish music tradition, and actually bluegrass is featured this year. It's always either a part of Ireland or a musical contribution, paying tribute to Ireland's influence on bluegrass music, which is quite substantial. We'll hear some fabulous musicians joining us here in our studio. And we also want to remind you that this could be your very lucky day. We're giving away three sets of tickets to Irish Fest. You need to post on our Facebook page just a brief thing of why you'd like the tickets, although we will do them quite randomly, so you can just put your name on there as well. Or email talk@wpr.org, and you need to do that, please, before 11 o'clock today. Thank you, Thomas. We will continue and hear some live music in just a moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking about Irish Fest. This year's Irish Fest is paying homage to bluegrass music, American roots music that came out of Appalachia and the European immigrants who settled there. We have bluegrass musicians from Galway, one of my favorite parts of the whole country, joining us, our studio here in Milwaukee. We Banjo 3 from Galway, Ireland. We're going to have them play and they'll play again and they'll play again. And we will talk to them about their music, about the banjo, about the roots of their music and their performance. They're very well-known musicians, really all around the world, as a lot of Irish music is. So let us first hear from We Banjo 3 from Galway, Ireland. This is from their new record, Roots of the Banjo Tree. Martin Winnis, number 2. Martin Winnis, number 1, The Coal Miner. Thank you. back of my seat here. Thank you. Very nice. Very nice. We're talking this hour of the program with members of Weed Banjo 3, and they're going to be featured as one of the performance groups, the highlighted performance groups in the Bluegrass part of the Irish Fest celebration, because Bluegrass is going to be featured. So we have so many people in the studio. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves so that I know it'll be better that way, so I don't get your names wrong and some of your brothers. And please introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about the founding of your band, which is really very prominent. You're all prominent musicians. You have an album coming out. Whoever wants to start, please introduce yourselves. First, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks very much. I'm Martin Howley from Ardrahan, so I play banjo and mandolin.
Hi, okay, Martin, hello.
How are you doing? I'm David Howley, I'm Martin's brother. I'm from Galway, and I play guitar and banjo, and I do the vocals in the band.
Uh-huh, great.
I'm Enda's Cahill, I'm also from Galway, and I play banjo and mandolin.
And I'm Enda's brother Fergal's Cahill, also from Galway, and I play the fiddle and the bowron and the guitar in the band also.
Oh, all right. You're all very talented on many instruments. Galway is one of my favorite parts of Ireland, in addition to Donegal, which I love. But there's such a vital music scene. You must have grown up with lots of musicians, theater. There's something that it just is all over Galway. If you grew up in Galway, it's so omnipresent, isn't it?
Yeah, Galway's an absolute hive of cultural activity, Kathleen. It's constant year-round. We've one of the biggest arts festivals in the whole of Europe that happens during the summer in Galway, and some of the most famous Irish musicians come from Galway as well, the likes of Frankie Gavin and Joe Burke, Vincent Broderick, some really, really great tradition of music there.
Isn't it nice that you have families participating in this together? I mean, is it unusual, or is it usual to have people from the same family in Ireland play music together?
Well, that's not unusual at all. Lots of people would learn music from their families. There's four in my family. We all play. There's just the two of them. And, you bounce off each other, learn tunes from each other. Loads of families across Ireland all play music. Not necessarily in bands together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because of the fighting.
Because of the fighting, huh? Do you consider the kind of music that you're playing to be bluegrass music?
No, we're Irish musicians, first and foremost, Irish musicians. But what we do, Kathleen, with the band, because we're all banjo players, is we try and trace the journey of the banjo. So we absolutely love bluegrass music, and we love old-time Appalachian music because of the sound of the banjo that's in that music.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we try and merge the two together, explore the journey of the banjo through the minstrel music, through old-time Appalachian and bluegrass music. And, of course, you know, there's a huge Irish banjo contingent that play, you know, the most fantastic music.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of all of them.
Is bluegrass Irish inspired?
Doc Watson famously said that there wouldn't have been any bluegrass if not for the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly. Definitely. The old time and Appalachian music, which was the forerunner of modern bluegrass music, was hugely influenced by the travelling Irish and the travelling Celts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scots, yeah.
Let's talk about the instruments that you play, and starting with banjo. Is it a difficult instrument to learn? Is it an instrument that's been around in Ireland for a long period of time?
Well, as Enda mentioned, I suppose to answer your first question, I suppose we all love the banjo, and so it was kind of a work of pleasure to learn it and to try and master it. And with that, I suppose there is certain inherent difficulties in playing any instrument, but the banjo, because of its size and the technique required to play it, can be difficult for kids. But there's a huge number of fantastic younger players in Ireland now, so that would attest to the fact that the banjo is obviously a good instrument to learn. And I suppose how it came into being in Irish music is, as Enda said, the banjo journeyed from Africa to America. And then with that minstrelly tradition where they... I suppose they mocked the slaves through music, which was predominantly, maybe 80% of those were Irish musicians. So they travelled over to Ireland, and the banjo was first seen in Ireland in that period of time. And then the banjo came to the fore with the folk revival back in the 50s and 60s with the Dubliners and Barney McKenna especially. So he kind of reinvented the banjo for Irish music, much like what Earl Scruggs did for bluegrass. And he'd have a huge influence on us. And then there's been, I suppose, the second generation of the likes of Jerry O'Connor and Kevin Griffin, who brought out fantastic albums and inspired a legion of banjo players to take up the instrument. And I suppose we're following on in that tradition now and trying to push boundaries. while staying respectful of the tradition. There's some fantastic stuff.
Mm-hmm. You're playing guitar. You also play, what did you say?
Banjo.
You play banjo, yeah, and guitar.
I suppose I picked up guitar when about 8 years ago. Actually, after hearing Fergal play the guitar, I suppose when I was younger, I would have looked up to both Fergal and Enda from musician's point of view, and I would have, I suppose, gone to a lot of the sessions they would have been played in, and I suppose I would have learned a lot of the stuff that I play in guitar. I would have to credit that is slightly stolen off Fergal.
Do you want to respond to that? Come on in.
No, I have no response to that.
both Enda and Fergal taught myself and David for a period of time on a fairly casual basis, but we would have learned an awful lot of what we know from the lads, and so we'd be hugely in admiration of the stuff they play. So it's nice to be able to play in a band with the lads, so it's great.
We taught them everything we know, Kathleen, but not everything they know.
But then they went and got real teachers.
Well, what about real teachers? Are you all formally trained in some way, or have you trained yourselves?
There's a great history or a great kind of culture in Ireland of when kids go into national school at the very primary level at 4 or 5, that they everybody starts on the tin whistle, the little penny whistle.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. And we would have been lucky going to a school where everybody got a whistle when they started. And then when you get to the kind of age of 6 or 7 or 8, you kind of branch off into other different instruments. And there's great teachers in Ireland now. Really, and there's loads and loads and loads of fantastic young musicians. Hmm. And it's really burgeoning at the moment.
Hmm. I have a tin whistle. Somebody gave me a tin whistle a couple months ago. Is it hard to learn?
No, tin whistle is really easy to learn, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, none of us are able to play it anymore because we've forgotten.
Easy to learn and hard to master.
Oh, I think you could pick it up and be proficient by tomorrow is what I'm thinking with all of you. You have a new album coming out?
Yeah, it's out. It's out now, Kathleen.
Oh, it's out now?
Yeah, yeah. It's called...
Just in time for Irish Fest,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. We're going to launch it at the festival. It's called Roots of the Banjo Tree. And it explores all those different aspects of the banjo music that we spoke of and the Irish influence on them.
We're going to hear more and we'll have you introduce your next piece. We just want to remind people that we are giving away 3 sets of tickets to Irish Fest before 11 o'clock. So if you would like to go, and I know that many, many listening, some of you will be able to go thanks to Irish Fest making these tickets available, go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or go to talk@wpr.org. Please do that before 11 o'clock this morning, and we have 3 pairs of tickets to give away. We'll hear more from our musicians and ask them what they're going to be playing for us next. And we can also welcome phone calls, too. If you want to talk about your experience at Irish Fest or have questions for our band members who have joined us here in studio all the way from Galway, we would like to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're hearing from Wee Banjo 3. They are from Galway, Ireland, and they will be performing at Irish Fest. We'll be taking your phone calls, too. We have tons of calls coming in, so let's hear a song, and Enda Tskehill will be telling us what we're going to hear, and then we'll go to your phone calls.
Thanks, Kathleen. This is a song that we learned from Guy Davis, who's a blues guitarist from New York. But we've kind of tried to reinvent it in an Irish, old-time, bluegrassy kind of way. So it's called We All Need More Kindness in This World.
We all need more kindness in this world. You can look high or low, but there's no place else to go. We all need more kindness in this world. We all need more sunshine in this world. We all need more sunshine in this world. Oh, you can look high or low, but there's no place else to go. We all need more sunshine in this world. World, we all need more loving in this world. You can look how low, but there's no place else to go. We all need more loving in this world.
I like that one. I like the message of that. You should make that a theme song, huh?
It really fits Ireland because one of the verses is, we all need more sunshine.
Yeah, right. And if it's you, we need more banjos as well.
Yeah. Always need more
banjos. What is it about the sound of the banjo? The banjo? There's something that makes, it really does make your feet move.
You're absolutely right. It's got a really happy sound. Everybody likes the banjo. We've come across it, you know. It's good. There's something in it. There's a spirit. There's an energy to the instrument that's just really, really special.
Yeah. And what do you draw on for your music? Are you looking at old songs too? Are you generating new songs? What's your repertoire?
We're both. We take our influences from all sides, Kathleen. I mean, we absolutely love going back and looking at the old recordings, particularly the old Appalachian recordings. There's some brilliant stuff from, you know, down in the Kentucky area. There's some great old fiddlers. And in the Irish music, you know, going back to the very early recordings in the early 1900s, which was happening in New York in the vaudeville era, there was such a great energy and a great spirit to the music. And banjo was one of the very predominant instruments, which at the time hadn't featured at all in Irish music. But over here in New York, was the number one recording instrument along with the melodeon. And there's just such great fun and there's great drive to that music. So we dip into that. And then, of course, we look at the whole modern traditional Irish music, which, you know, is just enormous. It's never been as successful and never been as big as it is at the moment. And there's just so many great bands and so many great musicians. So there's so much for us to draw on.
Right. And we've lost some of our wonderful banjo players, Doc Watson, just recently.
That's right, Doc Watson, Earl Scruggs and Barney McKenna.
Earl Scruggs,
this
yeah.
year, yeah. Barney was responsible for the Irish banjo tuned as it is. Mm-hmm. He was the very first guy to tune it the way that it's that everybody in Ireland plays it.
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. Interesting. Did all of you think that you would just naturally do this with your lives? Did you ever think that... I would think it would be a hard road to go to be a musician. Did you know when you got that first tin whistle that maybe you were going to play some other instrument, but you were going to play music forever?
You wanted to be a rocket scientist, Martin.
Yeah. He's got time.
I suppose myself and David are both. Our dad plays music, and that was a huge influence on us. And we just saw the enjoyment and the great way you communicate with people from all over the world, because even if you don't speak a common language, music just transcends all that. And we've had some fantastic experiences travelling. Fergal has toured widely in Japan, China, and he's some great stories from over there. And I suppose myself and Enda have been lucky enough to tour quite a bit in America and down in Nashville and meet all these fantastic musicians. And that shared bond of music is stronger than anything, you know, so it's great. So I suppose that's where we come from.
People will hear you say China and Japan and say, really, China and Japan, why there?
I was working with a couple of different outfits and shows. I suppose the Riverdance show did a huge amount to introduce Irish music to Asia and to the Eastern countries, and I was working over there with the dance show similar to that, in both China and Japan, over the last few years, and there's an enormous response to the Irish music, in Japan especially. I couldn't believe how well, and again it as Martin said, it transcends language. There's no language barriers when it comes to music, because to see Japanese people up dancing to a reel and clapping along with jigs that we've been playing all our lives, it's incredible.
Have you done Irish Fest before?
Both myself and Fergal did it in 2004 with a band called the Brock Maguire Band.
Oh.
But this is the first time doing it as We Banjo 3, and we're really excited. It was number one festival on our target list, particularly in the US, because it's so big and it's so much fun, and you know, we really enjoyed it and we loved the ski lift. We couldn't wait to come back and do the ski lift.
You love the ski lift.
You're going to see four banjo players hanging out at the ski lift playing the banjo going back and over the festival grounds.
You guys know how to have a good time, right?
No, we sure are.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Plus, it's also, I know that this happens every year, this festival is in its 32nd year, I think, that musicians get together from other bands, and it's a music festival for you, too, for the next 4 days, isn't it? It must be heaven to be an Irish musician and be in Milwaukee this weekend.
Yeah, there's some amazing musicians coming this weekend. We're very excited to see the Punch Brothers, particularly, which we think they're a huge influence on us, except that we can't play even remotely as good as they can yet.
So you're playing when? All throughout the course of the next 4 days? Are there particular times you'll be playing?
Yeah, today we're at 5 o'clock. We're on the Tipperary stage. That's, what day is today? Thursday.
Thursday
the 16th. Yeah, we're jet-lagged. I know that tomorrow, Friday night at 10 o'clock, we're on the Celtic Roots stage.
Uh-huh.
We're closing that stage tomorrow. We're in the Village Pub on a couple of occasions, and we're on the Miller Light stage, I think, at noon on Saturday. And if you're wondering who, you just look out for the four incredibly handsome banjo players. and they'll probably know where We Banjo 3 are.
Aren't all of the banjo players at Irish Fest this year incredibly handsome?
They are, certainly are. Yeah.
They all are.
I hope Jerry O'Connor's listening. He's really handsome.
This is slightly divergent. We were talking earlier, and Fergal, as he said earlier, is a multi-instrumentalist, and he plays almost everything. And we've banned him from taking up the banjo, but he can play the banjo pretty good. And we said,
the only reason we banned him is he'd be better than us.
We said the definition of a gentleman is a person who can play the banjo but chooses not to do so.
How many instruments do you play?
Oh, it varies from time to time. Over the years, I've done gigs up on 6 or 7 instruments, I suppose. It depends.
How does anybody do that? I don't know.
I started so young. Being the youngest of four musicians in our house, I kind of had to go at every instrument. So I started on the bowron and then went on to the whistle, and fiddle then was in the house, so I started playing the fiddle, and there was piano and drums and bits and pieces of everything. And then as I went through secondary school, there was a great music department, so I had a great opportunity, and I had lots of access to instruments, and I think I have kind of a natural flair for stringed instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it, and I can throw my hand to anything, but the lads are all able to pick up any stringed instrument really and knock a tune out of it. It's once you can play one stringed instrument, you can kind of have a grasp at how they work.
Tuning them is the problem.
Tuning them is the problem, yeah.
Well, I admire that. That's wonderful to be able to go from one to another. It's great.
That's great. It's,
and did you have other dreams? It sounds like you were always going to be a musician.
Since I was walking.
A juggler?
A juggler and a musician, yeah.
Hey, that's all right.
So I couldn't juggle, so I decided to go with the music.
Yeah. We want to remind you that if you want a rundown for Irish Fest, go to irishfest.com, because you get the performance times and the dates of everything. You can find these guys, if they're not playing music on that sky thing, you can find me at the dogs. I love the dogs at this festival. It's the first place I go, and I'm not sure why, but I just love all of them, the Irish dogs.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't been there.
No, I'm a cat lover.
You're a cat lover?
No, I'm not. No, no.
Well, mostly the dogs. They don't have cats. Yeah, but they have great Irish dogs there. It's really, it's wonderful. And all kinds of other events taking place as well. Well, and we also want to tell people that we have three sets of tickets to Irish Fest. You can go to our Facebook page, or you can go to talk at WPR.org before 11 o'clock this morning. I don't know if we have time for another full song, but we do for part at least of a song. Do you want to play another song for
Absolutely,
us?
Yeah. We're going to play three old-time tunes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're called John Brown's The Lost Indian and Sail Away Ladies.
Fest, which opens this afternoon at 5 o'clock on the Summerfest grounds in Milwaukee. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. It was wonderful. Just a reminder, three sets of tickets to Irish Fest. Post on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or go to email talk at WPR.org in the next 1 minute. And good luck to you. We'll see you at Irish Fest. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning for producing this show.